and he mentions it later. It is apparent he came from Judah. Jesus' descent was not counted among the Levites. Now, I know those who are experts on the genealogy of Christ will say from the book of Luke that, well, Mary's cousin was Martha, and Martha's husband was a priest. That would be, oh Lord, help me remember his name. Well, Zechariah, father of John the Baptist, right? John was his cousin. And the Levites were supposed to marry women of Levi, meaning they would be of the same tribe. And I don't know how strenuously that was followed, though the law was pretty clear about it. So if they took, you know, at some point they stopped marrying outside of their tribe, then we know Christ had some descent from Levi. But it was not through a channel that would be considered, you know, like I said, it's like if your grandfather was a Levite or your grandmother was a Levite, married to someone from another tribe, you would not be considered of Levi necessarily. You know, I'm no expert, okay? I'm just saying that however you look at it, Christ's descent is always characterized as coming down from Judah. The tribe of Judah, of the 12 tribes of Israel, for those who are not familiar. Israel had 12 tribes. And Christ was descended from the tribe of Judah. So his descent is not counted, at least, of the Levites. But he who is not a Levite received tithes of Abraham and blessed the one. They had the promises. Abraham had the promises of God. And without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. I mean, people bless each other. Lessers bless betters. But without contradicting that, the greater is the one who has the wherewithal to bless the lesser. I mean, he that is greater is able to confer something on someone who is less. What can someone who is less bless the greater with? And certainly that is the Old Testament truth. You know, I think of a lot of, there's a lot of, I think I've seen in movies and stuff where you see the poor widow woman, oh, bless you. What she's hoping, what they're saying actually is, God bless you. Hoping for a greater to bless someone who has blessed them. So again, really, the lesser can only appeal to a greater to confer a blessing on someone who is greater than them. But the greater are able to confer something. You look at the patriarchs, their fathers would pass on blessings to the sons. The sons didn't come up and start blessing the fathers. And that's, there are ways to contradict this, and that we could wrangle over it, but this is the way it really works. The less is blessed of the better. So Melchizedek is better than Abraham. Abraham, who had the promises. Blessing, I will bless thee, and multiplying, I will multiply you. I will make you a great nation, and kings shall come of thee. And even Christ. Verse 8, and here men that die receive tithes, but with air he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he lives. And as I may so say, Levi also, who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. For he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. Meaning, in that the father paid tithes, Levi being his great-great-grandson, or great-grandson, sorry, paid tithes in Abraham. Verse 8, and here men that die receive tithes. You know, mortal men receive these ties, but he is immortal. He does not die. So what's he getting at? Let's go on. Verse 11, if therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? He's asserting that Christ is arise the priest after the order of Melchizedek. Right? He arose after that order. The Levitical priesthood did not make people perfect. And he goes into this later on. You know, the sacrifices offered continually never really made you perfect. You'd have to come back and sacrifice again because it didn't take away sins. By making those sacrifices, God set up a system whereby he would be appeased. You know, he would be satisfied. People would say, well, why would animal sacrifices satisfy God? Well, without any further reasons, I mean, he could have made it folding paper cranes if he wanted to. But he did that because he intended to sacrifice his son on the cross, who is the express image of his person. You know, there's nothing else to sacrifice. And therefore, those animal sacrifices were a shadow, a type of what was coming. But beyond that, well, you'd say, well, why does that work that way? It's just simply the system that God set up. There's nothing inherent about blood that takes away sins, except that the loss and sacrifice and pain, those things represent what it takes to get rid of sin. To get rid of sin, I know, takes, you have to give things up. You lose things. And there's some pain. There can be. So to be able to overcome sins takes sacrifice. And that's the point, is to take away sins, yes, the guilt, but also the very nature itself. To change your nature takes sacrifice and pain, suffering and blood.